In the barony of Castakin, evil is rising. Creatures born of mud, stone, and bone have appeared. Politics keep the powers that be from taking action against this threat. The barony needs heroes. In the far-off hamlet of Hovel's Way, two childhood friends, bound by dreaming stars, may be the heroes that the barony needs. This is their story. The story of the heroes of Hovel's Way. Odine Dahlia Celestine is played by Angela Murray.
She knows that there is something amiss here, but she is not socially adept to have any clue of how to help.
Aramon Durant is played by Jared Rasher.
I know, I've mentioned my dreams before. I had one that didn't just feel meaningful, it felt important.
And the Dungeon Master is Chris Snezak.
Why are we teaching when we're fighting something terrible?
Did you know Emma's older than me?
Yes.
When did this happen?
About 3 days before you were born.
It looks humanoid in some way, shape, or form, except it's just made of mud.
You will not invade my small clothes!
Get it off, get it off, get it off!
Now, we begin
with Aramon Durant. You're dreaming. Standing in your nightclothes. You know it, but you still can't awaken. Silt surrounds your feet, your ankles, your knees. You're stuck, not sinking, but the earth rises in front of you out of the Wanderer's Lake. A lake you know so well. You've swam in it hundreds of times, walked the shores, picked up rocks and skipped them across the water. What is your favorite memory of Wanderer's Lake as you grew up in Hovel's Way?
I have definitely had a few moments with my father where we went here fishing. I really like the idea of staring out over the lake as the sun is going down and just seeing like that bright orange reflection rippling across the entire surface there. But I also think this is probably a place where Odie and I have been able to hang out and swim and just goof around when we were supposed to be doing other more important chores.
Those memories, those flashes, you see them in the rising earth, reflected off a glimmering stone. Huge and bulbous in the dirt that continues to rise up and over Hovel's Way. That memory, those memories are being encased in the stone, crushed, and then you see it, you understand. That stone isn't a stone, but an eye that's pierced your very soul, carving out a piece of who you are. That eye is now hundreds of feet above, looking down, towering over you.
Little dreamer.
The voice sounds like an avalanche crushing your ears into paste.
Your master's chains are breaking.
The mountainous entity topples over and descends upon you.
And when they do, I will crush everything your dream holds dear.
Before it crushes you, the faces of Emma and Dante Beat scream out from the stone. You feel the impact. Then you wake up. We cut to the hills, outside of Hovel's Way proper. There's a warm little cottage resting under a beautiful starlit sky. Next to that cottage is a large, brassy telescope. And next to that telescope is a young woman.
Odine Dahlia Celestine, come from that telescope and eat your dinner. It's gone cold and I don't want to see you worn out because you've forgotten to eat again.
But I'm sure there's gonna be another meteor any minute now.
The old woman walks from the hut with a bowl of stew. And she has a well-worn cane that you are very familiar with. It's gorgeous. It's made of polished wenge. She strolls over to you, hands you the bowl.
See anything interesting in the celestial matrix this evening, dearie?
There was that series of meteors earlier that I showed you that streaked across the sky, shooting stars. And then the constellations, they seem to be in just the right... I don't know what's different, but something feels different about what they look like right now.
You are not wrong, Odine. I can see it too. There's something old coming. You can see it there in Basilisk Minor. That twinkling eye is closer to the jackal bear's laughing jaw. It's an unusual sign. One of power loosening, like a snake uncoiling and ready to strike. But not yet. Well, most likely not yet. You know, Odine, that the future is hard to see and the stars can only guess at what we mortals may do.
Yeah. The stew smells good.
You should eat it.
I suppose the stars will wait.
She pulls out a few berries from her pocket and she hands them to Monty, who is on your shoulder.
He'll grip them with his little raccoon hands, greedily pull them in close.
You stand out there on the hill for a while, looking at the stars, discussing portents and signs. After a while, she says, "I think maybe you should stay close to some of the bee children tomorrow. I feel one or more of them may be in some danger. Or at least that's what the running river of fire pouring into the farrier's boat tells me. It's probable, I think. I'd go myself, but I'm having tea with Jonathan. Besides, you should be among the people a little more. You're a grown woman these days. And may need to leave this place in the future."
Leave? I don't want to leave. Why would I want to leave?
The stars sometimes say we must go out there to experience the world.
I mean, but this is home.
That doesn't mean you can't come back, but sometimes we must leave to learn.
And I can't get a second bowl of stew if I leave.
You can have a second bowl of stew right now. I still have some on the hearth.
Okay.
We cut to the next morning. Ahriman, it is the exact thing that you've done every morning for many, many years. You and your father are out sparring. Because swordplay is an important thing. I would imagine that you probably work at this every day with your dad.
Definitely. And I am very good at the actual forms, and I am terrible at remembering the proper names for them. So he will call out like the swords master that we are currently learning from, and I will completely forget it. I'll have the form down just like that, but I have no recollection of names or, you know, the history or who first introduced these moves.
You are both standing there with wooden swords, and you are at the end of your workout, which is an all-out duel between you and your father. He stands there in his 50s, looking at you with the sword, standing in one of those forms that you can't name, but you know it's for balance, for attack and defense, basically waiting for you to make a move. So what will you do now, son?
All right, well, I believe the proper counter to the form would be to come around this way, and I unfortunately have it in my head, but I'm trying so hard to impress him. Instead of doing it and actually potentially taking him off guard, I explain exactly what I'm about to do.
Go ahead and make an attack roll. First roll of the game. See if you can actually hit him.
What I'm going to do is I like feint one direction, but I'm telling him I'm feinting that direction, and then I come for the two-handed slash.
Yeah, you should probably roll with disadvantage that you're actually telling him what you're doing.
He doesn't need to roll at disadvantage.
I probably don't, but let's try this one more time and see. Yeah, so that is a glorious 7 on the...
Solid. So you explain to him what you're doing, and he sidesteps your two-handed strike. You're not wearing armor right now, because you guys are just sparring. Does a 14 hit you?
Yeah.
You take that two-handed swipe at him. He sidesteps you and swats you on the rear end with his wooden sword. Enough talking and explaining yourself. I know that you know how this goes, and when you are in a real fight, you will not be speaking. You do not need to impress me anymore. I know you know how to use that blade. Now use it.
You're right. I should have gone with... And then I stop myself. I reverse the grip on the sword. I roll towards him, and then I go with a cut up from the ground to try and take him from the hip up to the shoulder.
Go ahead and roll. A 10, huh?
Not the most impressive swing that I have ever made here.
Is that with your plus to hit?
Yeah.
So that slash, it comes up, and he just takes a half a step back, and it misses him by inches. But you know it's on purpose. He does it to you all the time. And as he does that, he steps inside your swing and hip bumps you and knocks you on your butt. That was good. You were very close there. I'm moderately impressed with your progress today.
I get this feeling that I start these sessions really good. And the more I feel like he is criticizing anything that I've done, I get worse at swordplay.
The sparring session goes on, and of course, you can't strike him. You never have, really. Maybe once in the past 5 years.
That was the time that the sword actually slipped out of my hand and touched him, but I never admitted the fact that it actually slipped out of my hand, and I didn't mean to do that.
At the end of the session, as you're like on the ground, dirty and sweaty, and he is just standing there perfectly clean. Good workout. Your footwork is polished. You have very good form. You've mastered all of the basic skills of swordsmanship. There's not much else I can teach you. Now you just need opponents that you don't fight every day to get better. Opponents that aren't me. Then he looks around at the farm as the sun has come up over the horizon. It's not quite all the way up over the horizon, but it's up now. He looks, he says, it's time to get to work. And he is like, let's get the farming chores done. And as you go to start doing that, milking the cows and checking the fields, he says, are you still good to give Emma and Dante their lesson today? I'm having a tea with Noelle.
Yes, and I remember the dream, and I'm very torn because I want to bring it up, but ever since I told my father I wasn't going to become a knight, I have not wanted to bring up my dreams because I'm afraid that if we talk about this visitation, he's going to tell me that I'm making things up in my head. I don't actually have this connection to the dreaming veil that I think that I have. So I stop myself short, but I say, yes, Father, I'm definitely looking forward to keeping an eye on the children because children need an eye kept on them from time to time.
I don't know how much younger Emma is than you. She's 19 and Dante's 16. So, but if you call them children, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Emma might take offense to that at some point, but we'll see.
I'm definitely picturing Aramon is probably about 19 or so.
Your father looks at you, Jonathan. He says, not that you call him Jonathan, but he looks at you and he says, I would not call Emma a child if I was you.
I wouldn't mean any offense, but I am taller than her.
That is true, but she was also born 3 days before you.
I didn't know that. How did I not know when she was born? I know her birthday. I just didn't know the year. And I start just kind of babbling on and on here.
He just shakes his head. He's like, time to get to work. We cut to Hovel's Way, the town proper. There is a larger building. It is the Inn of the Wandering Soul. People mill about it, or having lunch at this point. A couple people have gone in to the common room there. You see Remy Dufour. He is standing outside, taking in some sun. He's got a straw hat on. He's got a piece of wheat in his mouth. Pulls off his spectacles just above his bushy mustache and starts cleaning them. Puts them back on. When he sees you walking up, Aramon, my boy, what's going on today? How are you?
Thought I had him, and then I told him exactly what I was going to do, and I have vented this frustration to him multiple times in the past.
You do that, and eventually he pulls out a little flask, and he hands it over to you.
I imagine I have done this before, but no matter what my constitution says, no matter anything else, I am a lightweight when it comes to alcohol. So I take this, it still burns on its way down, and I take a second and thank you. This is very good. And I hand it back to him.
You know, boy, you don't have to drink it if you don't like it.
No, no.
Just helps, takes the edge off.
No, yes, there's no edge at all anymore. That's great.
As you're standing there, Odie, you walk into the town proper, which there's five farmhouses. The bee children are all over the place because there's a ton of them. There's like 11 of them running around usually at any given time. There's carts and horses. You see McGinty and his wife, Celine. You see Gracie. She's working on a plow that was broken. What are you doing as you walk into town? Into the town proper, anyway.
So Monty is probably going back and forth between being kind of walking beside her and then climbing up on top of her shoulder and just being a raccoon and doing raccoon things. But Odie herself is kind of looking around and she's trying to do an inventory of beet children. And she keeps losing count.
Yeah, it's not easy, right? Because the beet farm is right there. But you see Pence following his father Donovan around. You see Wallace kind of nipping at his mother's skirts as she is milking a cow. You see Cheryl and Roger tending to one of the cows. Roger looks up with Cheryl and they both wave at you. And they're like, hi, Odie, how you doing?
Hi, Roger. Hi, Cheryl.
You see Wilma. She's putting a pie on the windowsill right now as it's cooling. You see Mateo wandering off towards the south. He's a younger child. You know that he just wanders around all the time, is often looking for some semblance of adventure. He's heading towards Valentine's place. You see Kalen making his way actually past you. He already passed you, going up towards your home because he studies with Noel on a fairly regular basis. Likes to read. He's trying to learn how to read. Dante and Emma are making their way off towards the docks because that's where they tend to have their lessons. Isabella is combing her hair, sitting out by the water barrel that they have, and she's keeping herself clean. And then you see Alice, who is in the town proper, speaking with Robin Hunt, who is here. They're friends. And you haven't seen Robin yet there, Aramont. Otherwise, you would have said hi to her. Or maybe you wouldn't have said hi to her, but she hasn't said hi to you either, so.
I would have awkwardly nodded at her.
Mm-hmm. Odie would probably take a moment to pause and just stare at Isabel, because she's pretty, and she is the type of girl that Odie will never be. So it's like looking at that foreign, strange object. It's a reflection of what could be, what will never be, and so she'll just shake her head a little bit and go back to looking for the rest of them.
As you're doing that, Isabel looks over at you and she waves. She's like, hello, Odie.
Hi, Isabel.
Oh, you should come here for a second. I have something for you.
For me?
Yes.
She'll do the look over each shoulder to make sure she's not talking to somebody else, even though there's absolutely no one else here. And then she'll wander over. What do you have for me?
Here. And she hands you a woven crown of flowers that you can wear on your head.
Oh my god, that's so pretty!
It matches your black hair perfectly.
And Odie will start naming each of the flowers that are in it. This is a such and such, and it grows over there, and this is a such, and it grows down by the pond, and this is, and it grows over by the stream over there, and she'll put it on. And
Kaylin said you would appreciate this, and I've been working on it for a little while. I realized it would look better on you than me, so I thought I would give it to you.
Oh, but anything would look nice on you.
That is generally true, but sometimes things look better on other people because of their hair color and their skin complexion. I just thought this would look nice on you, and I was correct. You look lovely.
Thank you. And at this point, Monty is probably back up on our shoulder, sniffing at it. It's not for eating.
He whispers in your ear, because he could talk to you.
Yeah.
But it looks so tasty.
Maybe later, when it starts wilting.
Okay. When it starts wilting, so when it gets a little bit black on the edges, I can have it?
Maybe.
Maybe it's better than not at all, I suppose.
Besides, I still have a berry for you in my bag.
Oh, can I have it? She, like, crawls down your back to go to your bag to get the berry.
Yeah, she'll open the bag and he can crawl inside.
And then he, like, pokes his head out as he starts nibbling on the berry. It's like, I won't eat it all right away. I know how you are. I won't get another one later. You enter the town proper. You see Aramon standing over there with Remy.
I'll wave. But I'm still doing my inventory of beet children.
Yeah, that was all of them. I you've seen them all, at least.
Oh, I know. I'm just, but she'll keep looking around and just being like, okay, that one's still there. That one's still there. Like, do I still see Mateo? Look, he's okay. Yeah, he's almost to Valentine's place. Kaylin, I see him heading up the hill. He'll be with Noelle. He'll be okay. Pence and Wallace, the littles, are still with their parents. So we're good there. Okay, and Wilma's in the... Wilma's in the kitchen, and oh, that pie smells really, really good. Okay.
Aramon, what are you doing?
As soon as I see Odie, I'm actually going to kind of make this, like, awkward head motion like I've made many times before to kind of tell her that when you get a chance, come over here. I need to talk to you.
It takes you, like, 12 tries because Odie seems very distracted by something. Eventually, Odie, you see it.
She'll wander over, again, doing the kind of walking. She's not looking where she's walking. Because it's like, okay, there's a beet child that just ran that way.
As you're walking and not paying attention, you trip a little bit and almost fall down, but Robin catches you, who's in town right now, and you haven't seen her in a couple of months. Robin is one of Lil Hava Castine's guard in Castakin. She works for the Baroness's house guard. Oh, hello, Odie. How are you?
Oh, hi, Robin. You're home.
Just for a few days.
And things are going well in Castakin?
Yes, very much so. I just came back to see everyone. And she looks at Aramon, who is, I don't know, Aramon, what are you doing? That she's looking at you, ignoring her.
Since I'm watching Odie walking by, I hadn't noticed that she was back in town yet. And as soon as I see her, like, reach over to help Odie from falling over, I immediately do the half second, okay, I don't think she's seen me yet, so I'm going to quickly, like, turn my back and look the other direction so that I can act like I haven't seen her. So that it won't be awkward if I don't say hello to her.
Do you do the fix your hair thing?
Odie, you see Robin look at Aramon and then grimace a little bit as he turns away from her. And she shakes her head a smidge. I don't know why I keep coming back here, you hear her say.
Odie does the awkward look between the two of them. Absolutely not. Knowing she knows that there is something amiss here. But she is not socially adept to have any clue of how to help. So she just goes, hey, Aramon, look, Robin is home.
He could not say a word now if he wanted to. He is awkwardly nodding and kind of waving and then acting as if something needs his attention over closer to the inn.
Remy looks at you, Aramon, and then looks over at Robin. Hello, Robin. It's good to see you. Do you need your normal room? Yeah, that'd be great. I appreciate that, Remy. Thank you. It's good to see you, Aramon. How are you?
Yeah. Training.
She just nods. She's wearing, like, her leathers, and the House of Castakin crest is on her shoulder. She looks over at Yodi, and she shakes her head, and she's like, men, I'll never understand them.
Then she walks into the Inn of the Wandering Soul with her knapsack over her shoulder.
Before she's out of earshot, Odie will look at Aramon and tilt her head to the side. Why is it you lose your voice when talking to Robin?
I look around quickly to make sure that there's no one like within earshot, because I will tell Odie just about...
Remy's right there.
I don't know that I'm quite as guarded around Remy either, but I'll be like, there were some mistakes that were made, and I don't know how to fix them, and I am hoping that at some point...
That if you ignore them long enough, they'll go away?
No. We've talked about this. I have a calling. And since I have a calling, eventually, maybe the Dreaming Veil will reveal to me how I need to fix this situation. So the best way to deal with this situation is to get some more sleep.
I don't know that you need to dream anymore about talking to her when you could just talk to her. I mean, I'm not very good with my words, and I'm not very good with people, and I usually say the wrong thing, and you usually do pretty well talking to people, so I don't understand why you can't talk to Robin. You two used to be like this. And she shoves her fingers together to show that they were really close. You used to be like this.
Remy cleans his glasses, and he's like, they were closer than that. Puts them back on.
Odie looks very confused. But you used to be like this. And I don't understand, like, just go say you're sorry.
You know, Odie, for not being very good with words or not thinking that you're very good with words, you're very good with words. I'm gonna go. He puts his glasses on and he walks away.
Bye, Remy.
Bye, Odie. Oh, here, Monty. He pulls out some bread that's a little bit crusty and hands it to the raccoon.
He just reaches up from within the bag with his little raccoon hands.
I picture that I carry a couple of sticks, and whenever I see the raccoon, I hand him one of the sticks. And we fake spar until I let the raccoon knock the stick out of my hand.
I love this game. It's so much fun. I like when he lets me do this. I'm not sure that anybody else can hear Monty but you, Odie.
Yeah.
I don't picture myself hearing him at all, but I know Odie, and I know the raccoon is very close to Odie, and this raccoon can learn how to sword fight with sticks. So this is great. This is a ritual now.
And I mean, you would have heard Odie talking to Monty. Like, she responds to him like she's talking to you. She will respond to Monty. And like, all he'll have said is some sort of sub-vocalized little raccoon chirps and trills.
So, Odie, I know I've mentioned my dreams before. I had one that didn't just feel meaningful, it felt important.
Okay.
There was an eye... And then people got buried in things. I hate this because they start fading and I really should remember them better. But it involved some of the beat children and they were in danger.
Which beat children?
The ones that I train with. And I am horribly bad with the beat children's names. This is actually why he thought that that Emma was younger than him, because he keeps getting all of their names mixed up.
Well, where are they? You're supposed to be training with them. Aren't you supposed to be training with them right now?
Yes, but I had to walk towards the inn when I saw Robin, so now I have to circle back around and keep up with them. But I'm going to keep an eye on them, but I think something bad might happen, and I just wanted...
I mean, that's what the stars say.
So, it's not just me. That's wonderful. I mean, it's not wonderful. It would be terrible. But I appreciate this divine validation.
Noelle said that I should come and keep an eye on the beat children because the stars say something bad might happen.
This is why you are my best friend.
Now, let's see... Pence is following Papa, and Wallace is, okay, yeah, Wallace is with Mama, and Cheryl and Roger are still out in the field, and Mateo should be with, he was heading towards Valentine's place. He should be okay there. We should go find, Dante and Emma.
Did you know Emma's older than me?
Yes.
When did this happen?
About 3 days before you were born.
With that, we cut over to the docks. Docks might be a stretch. It's more like a dock with a house attached to it. And in the boat that's next to the dock, and there's a couple of boats there, is Gordy Swain. He's the local fisherman. He lives at the dock house. He's this rotund man, and you can see he's already getting into his daily ritual. He's sleeping on his boat with a fishing pole tied to his hand. You know that he does that so that he can wake up when he gets a bite. He's got his hat pulled over his head, some lures on it. He peeks out of it every once in a while because Emma and Dante are there sparring under the tutelage of Aramon. There's Odie there, not too far away with Monty. Monty's like,
These people just like to wave sticks at each other. It's kind of weird.
Monty is probably down on one of the rocks and he's putting his hands in the lake to wash it because there's nothing more adorable than a raccoon washing their hands.
That's exactly what's happening.
The afternoon moves on towards evening, and as Monty is washing his hands in the lake, he's like, "That's weird." He says, "Odie, that right there."
"What's weird?"
He points at the water, and there's like ripples in the water.
Like fish?
No, something bigger. Something that looks like it's moving towards the shore.
Ahriman!
I will tell, you know, the two of them, "All right, we'll take a break here," and I will head over to Odie.
"Look.
What is this? Is a big fish."
"I don't think it's a fish."
That's when Gordy like peeks up from under his head. He's like, "That's weird." And then all of a sudden the fishing pole and him get ripped up towards the lake a little bit. And then out of the water explodes this creature. It looks humanoid in some way, shape, or form, except it's just made of mud. Except for the few bones that you see sticking out of it that may have been human or humanoid of some sort at some time in the past.
"That is not a fish."
"Emma, Dante, Gordy, get back."
Roll for initiative.
Two more of these creatures have come out of the water, one to the south and one slightly to the west, and now you have three of them to deal with.
Emma's backed off, but she sees them, and you told her to run, and she's like, "I think not," and she steps forward to fight these things because, you know, she thinks she's a swordsman. Now, Emma is 19, and she is moderately skilled with a blade at this point in her life, having trained for many years with your father and you. Not that you think she's your age for some reason, Aramon, but she's using a wooden sword because that's what she has. She manages to hit the thing, but her wooden blade just sticks to the mud and like lets go because it was either that or get pulled into the mud thing. She's like, "That's not supposed to happen, right?"
"Not normally, no, but I did want to compliment you because you had very good form when you made that thrust."
"Why are we teaching when we're fighting something terrible? I think this thing's trying to hurt us."
"It's what I do when I'm nervous. I teach."
You're up, Aramon.
I am going to draw my actual sword, and I am going to move up to this thing. Hopefully, you know, when I move right next to it, I'm going to be a more tempting target than Emma is, and I'm going to take a two-handed swing at it. Obviously, when I am not nervous about my father critiquing my form, I remember these lessons very well.
Mm-hmm. Go roll damage with your 24.
So that is 7 slashing damage.
You see your blade cut into the muddy creature. You think you hit a bone or something inside of it. Maybe it's just rock. You're not sure. It's slow to pull out, but you manage to actually yank your blade out of the creature. It is not dead. It is hurt. You think your blade didn't do nearly as much damage as it probably should have as the mud starts locking back together like that. But it is damaged.
This thing needs more organs.
Odie.
I'm going to step back from Emma. And I'm going to cast Entangle over the one that is threatening Gordy. I want to get the monster. I don't want to get Gordy. It'll probably get some of Gordy's boat. And I'm going to yell at Gordy to get out of there. A creature in the area when you cast a spell must succeed on a strength saving throw or be restrained. And then it can choose to basically try again later.
Why don't you describe how these vines and whatnot pop out and restrain this creature?
So it's the shores of this lake, so it's all of the greenery and the algae and all of that that grows within the lake that rises up out of the water and just engulfs and entangles this mud monster. And then Odin is going to run over and stand in front of Dante.
Probably a good thing is this mud monster to the south moves up to you. The mud monster in your entanglement. Oh, I rolled a nat 20 to get out of it, so.
Oh, that's not cool.
It has advantage to slock through the entangling. So it slides.
Yeah, but it can't attack Gordy this round, so.
Slides through the entangling and gets onto the dock. At this, Gordy seeing the mud monster do that, Gordy's like, well, he goes to grab the oars and try to row himself away from it, but the boat's entangled. Like, oh, I can't do that. He's just gonna stay in the boat at the moment. He's like, can you do something about these vines, Odie? I just stop it. I just want to leave.
I told you to run, not row.
It's the same thing, right? Aramon, this thing attacks you.
I'm prepared.
Oh, it terribly missed you. We are not playing with critical failures, because it's bad. It's worse for you guys than it is for the monsters, so.
Yes.
Odie, this thing schlocks up to you, and I assume a 17 hits you.
A 17 hits me.
You take 2 points of damage, and disturbingly, when it hits you with its arm, the mud transfers from it onto you and starts moving along you, like schlocking all around you, like it's alive.
Ew.
Any action you take currently is at disadvantage. At the beginning of your turn, you can make a free DC 11 strength or dexterity saving throw to remove the living mud. Dante's like, what do I do, Miss Odie? I can help.
Go run and tell Remy.
He takes off. Emma, without a sword, she looks around. She grabs a rock off the ground and she threatens the mud monster with the rock, which is providing the aid action to you, Aramon.
All right.
You get it. And she throws a rock right at its face, which it's now your turn. It hits it right in the face and just kind of slocks into it. The mud monster with its weird deepening eyes, and you can see skeletal teeth in its face as it opens its muddy mouth. I mean, the jaw doesn't open. You just see the skeletal teeth inside of the mouth area, like looks at her like it wants to hurt her.
I think we have practiced like group tactics before. So like as soon as she throws this, I do this thing where I kind of like roll off to the side of this thing and I swing for the last thing that felt vaguely like an organ. Because I'm thinking that's going to give me the most purchase. And I will take another two-handed swing, and that'll be with advantage since she's helping me.
Nice. Yes,
that hits with a 21. Tell me how you destroy this thing, how it turns back into mud slop.
I picture the rock hits it, and it turns towards Emma, and I am not going to let this thing harm Emma. So I do that pivot where, you know, we practice our teamwork move. I swing around, I pull the sword up and through it, and as soon as I feel something solid, I just punch it through and then yank it all the way out, and I throw the solid bit like onto the ground with like this wet thud,
and that muddy creature just turns slowly into a pile of slop on the ground. You can see that there are bones inside of it. Odie,
I'm gonna try and shake off the glop that's climbing on me.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of roll is that?
Strength or dexterity?
No, so I'm still at disadvantage for things.
Yep. But you have your whole suite of actions at your disposal.
Dante dropped his wooden sword.
Okay.
She's going to scoop it up and cast Shillelagh on it. Like in one hand motion, she starts reciting the words as she scoops up the wooden sword, and you see this sparkling green celestial light rolling around the thing as she swings and tries to hit the thing. Does a 14 hit?
It does.
Okay. So 3 points of damage, but it's magical.
Yes, and that matters. So when your shillelagh hits this muddy creature, instead of like the schlocking that has been happening with the other one, it slams and there's like a bit of an explosion as the magic blows partially through it. It doesn't die, but that hurt it way more than the other weapons have been hurting it to this point.
Thought you didn't like to spar.
I don't like to spar.
But you're holding a sparring sword.
Because it was the only thing in front of me. I wasn't going to slap it.
Did you dismiss the entanglement spell?
Yes, I'll dismiss the entanglement spell.
That allows Gordy to row out a little bit away from the dock, which then the monster that was entangled by your entanglement starts moving in. Oh, man, it's right there on Emma. Oh, man, Emma dodges out of the way of it deftly. You see her using her sword forms without even using her sword form, and instead of parrying, she slides to the right as it slaps at her.
Good footwork. Very good footwork.
Would you stop with the lessons? We're going to... These things are trying to hurt us. Oh man, Odie, this thing slaps you again.
Oh dear.
You take another 2 points of damage. More importantly, more of that mud gets on you. It's encircling your feet and you start sinking into the ground.
Ah! Monty, get away from me.
I will never leave you. And Monty actually starts trying to rip the mud off of you, the living mud. When you make that next saving throw to try to get some of this living mud off of you, you have advantage. Emma, realizing that you're right behind her, moves around the monster to flank it. Not that there's flanking rules in this game, but that is the tactic that she would use so that it has to divide its attention between the two of you. And Harry's, she's like, you over here, pay attention to me, trying to get it to like turn towards her and set it so that you can get it at its back. Aramon, it is your turn.
All right, so I will move into that space as she rolls around it. And I think this is going to be like just a big overhand, two-handed chop here.
You have advantage again.
So that, I believe an 18 will hit it.
Yes, it will.
It's only 5 slashing.
Does not kill it, but you definitely hurt it a little bit as your sword sinks into its shoulder. You manage to be able to pull the sword out with another one of those and there's like mud all over your blade that's like wiggling up and down it.
Ah, da, da, da.
Odie, feel free to make a strength or dexterity saving throw.
At advantage, because...
Yes, at advantage, because Monty is helping you, trying to get the mud off.
You see Monty like clawing at mud and just like trying to rip it off of you as it's wiggling all over the place.
At least I'm consistent.
Oh, God.
I will try and hit it again with my magical play stick. Nope, not this time.
More importantly, this mud that is on you and that you are sinking into is now like up to your waist. Like you're halfway down into the ground.
Ooh.
And you can feel things like reaching and grabbing at your ankles.
She's starting to panic. Ah! Ah! Get it off! Get it off! Get it off!
Aramon, you see this, by the way. So does Emma. She's like, oh, hey!
Before I noticed the mud, I was going to say, as soon as I see her not able to make the dexterity save, I'm like, this is why you should come to sparring lessons.
Oh, man.
Then I notice what's happening, and I feel instantly bad about what I just said.
You're lucky she's a little too distracted and panicky to have even heard what you said.
The thing that you notice now is that you're sinking into the mud, Odie, this monster leaves from your area as it doesn't seem to care as you are sinking farther and farther into this like quicksand mud stuff. You can take an opportunity attack against it.
8's not going to hit it.
No, it is not.
Stupid disadvantage.
I know, disadvantage sucks. It comes right over to you, Aramon, and takes a swing at you. That is a 15.
Can I clarify, was I able to wear my armor to the sparring session?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, no, it does not hit.
Cool, so you managed to sidestep it. By the way, Odie, you have inspiration because you told Dante to run away.
Okay.
So you can spend that at any point in time. The other one swings at Emma. Oh, it clips her. She's not down or anything like that, but she gets the covered in the mud too. It is actually her turn. She's going to make a saving throw at disadvantage. She rolled a 1. That's a problem. She's got this living mud on her. She's going to actually just move away to go try to help Odie out of the thing, which means she'll take an opportunity attack. Oh man, it clips her again. She falls down on the ground. She's not unconscious or anything like that, but she's also starting to sink into the mud now, like Odie is. Things are not going very well. Aramon, you're up. There's two of these things around you. Odie is sinking into the ground. Emma is sinking into the ground.
This is probably not the best tactical thing, but I also think that Aramon is still working through these ideas of when being tactical is just a theoretical thing and when it is something that should be done. I'm going to shift between the two mud creatures. Basically, I'm just going to kind of like duck and roll and then reach out to Emma. And I think what I am thinking is that I was going to try and brush some of the mud off of her. But what I actually end up doing is laying on hands and giving her back 3 hit points.
All right, she is fully healed, although still sinking into the mud, which is the problem.
I am a little shocked when I kind of see the bruises disappear because I know that I have a divine calling. I don't think that I've actually done much with my abilities yet.
What does it look like?
Yeah, what does it look like? And how do you feel about that?
I think since the source of his divine inspiration derives from his dreams, I think it's almost like a sparkly mist-looking thing that comes off of his hand and then like sinks into her. There's a brief second where he feels very warm because this is kind of a validation of everything that he keeps thinking about in his dreams. But he doesn't want to take the time to say anything yet.
Very nice. Odie, you see Gordy as you're like sinking into the mud. It is not quite your turn. It's Gordy's turn. Gordy's like, hey! And he uses his fishing pole and he flicks it with the line. See if it hits you. Yep. The fishing line hits you. So you have the fishing line to help pull yourself out, which will give you advantage on this roll. So any of your disadvantages are gone.
Okay.
Wow.
That's bad.
I'm using my inspiration to reroll that.
Sure. So for everybody out there that's listening to this, the way that we're going to use inspiration in this game is inspiration isn't a thing that gives you advantage. It just lets you roll an extra d20 and you just take the better of any of those. So like if you roll with disadvantage, you can roll with disadvantage first and then just be like, cool, I hated that roll, and then spend the inspiration to roll again. That's how we're going to play it.
I got a 12. Does that help?
Yeah, 11's all you needed.
Okay.
You managed to, with the help of the fishing line, and I don't know, why don't you tell me how this inspiration inspires you to get out of this mud pit with Monty barely on your shoulder sinking down there with you?
She's remembering that, like, I am friends with a raccoon. Raccoons stay clean. We don't like mud. This is not cool. She almost misses grabbing onto the line, and then she, like, no, I'm not letting this happen. And she grabs it and, like, uses that to claw her way back up out of the mud.
I will say it is fishing line, right? So it's really thin.
Yeah.
You take 2 points of cutting damage as it like wraps around your arm as you're pulling yourself out with this fishing line.
Do I get to take an action?
Yeah.
Then I'm going to run up covered in mud and I'm going to attack. Can I use two hands to like just bring it down like it's a staff instead of a sword?
Mm-hmm.
That's still not going to hit it.
It is not. Aramon, you have annoyed these creatures. They're not worried about Odie at the moment.
I am hoping so.
Neither of them can strike you. What does it look like as you dodge around these mud-flinging arms?
I think because I have been taught how to fight with armor and I have that on now, just as the flailing mud limb comes in, I will turn like the flat of my back at, you know, just the right point to where it like slaps against it but doesn't have a hard impact. And yes, I'm kind of picturing, you know, professional wrestlers and how they land so that the impact kind of goes across the entire back instead of in one spot. And then, you know, I do the same kind of like, you know, turning my back to the next one and having that same thing happen there.
Odie, you notice this because the mud actually hits his armor, but there's like this sparkling light around him that pushes the mud away.
Ooh.
It's Emma's turn. She's going to try to get out of this mud. She succeeds. She's out of the mud. The mud is now schlocked off of her.
Emma's had enough of this garbage. She looks around. She picks up a giant rock and she slams it onto the top of the thing's head. She actually hits it.
Go, Emma.
It's for 2 points of damage, which is 1 point of damage to this guy. That's not enough to kill it, but it's hurt a little bit more. Aramon, you're up.
For a brief second, after he realizes that you know this healing came from him, he's going to look at Odie's hands and think about healing her, but then realizes that's not life-threatening. I'm going to keep fighting these things. And I am going to take another two-handed swing at the one that is able to reach Emma. Oh,
that's a no. Odie, you're up.
Can we say that Monty on my shoulder can give me the help action?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't like mud.
Me neither.
3 points of magical bludgeoning on the one to the south of Aramon.
Tell me what it looks like when you destroy this thing with your magic shillelagh. And also how Monty helps you do it.
Monte actually sacrifices the remaining half of the strawberry he'd been munching on, and he flings it directly at the face of the mud monster, and it lands in the eye socket of the monster, giving it just enough of a distraction that when Odie comes down with both hands over her head, she basically hits the thing, and it's this swirl of green, almost viney energy with this star-like dust glitter around it as it goes through the mud monster, and basically it just kind of falls into two lumps down into the ground.
With that, we move on to the next monster. It swings at Aramon.
Oof.
It slaps Aramon for 2 damage, and there's like mud all over you.
I think I see what you mean about the mud. I do not like the mud.
Pulling at your joints, getting inside your armor, trying to slither into your eyes, your ears.
Oh, I'm going to need a wire brush for that. Oh.
Emma's like, get it off of you. Get it off of you. She actually tries to get it off of you. She does not succeed at getting it off of you. Aramon, you are up.
All right. I am first going to do a little shiver, you know, because I have the willies right now.
Strength or dexterity to get this stuff off of you, by the way.
I am definitely going to go with strength here. Is it a save or a check?
It's a save. It's also a disadvantage because the stuff sucks.
Ugh.
No, it's still on you.
I try and shake it off and it slides further into my armor and it's like between the padding and my clothing now and it's like, oh! And then I take a swipe at it after I do that. Yeah, I am definitely off balance because of that shimmying that I've been doing. So I swing way wide.
Odie, you see Aramon swing way wide and you can just tell that he's not comfortable.
She's going to come around the side and yell and swing.
Kill it, says Emma.
Oh, that's not going to be enough.
Oh, the monster goes after Aramon again, and it strikes you probably with an 18, I would imagine.
18, yes.
It hits you, and the mud, there's just more of it now. It's like caking you, and you start sinking into the ground.
Odie, I think it's getting into my small clothes.
Tell it can't have them.
Emma's like, what are you? No, no, you can't be down there. She tries to grab you and pull you out. She does not succeed at that. Aramon, you are sinking into the mud. Feel free to make that saving throw.
All right, let's try this again. So with disadvantage, that is a 12.
Yeah, you manage to pull yourself up out of the mud.
I will, like, pull one leg out and the other leg out. As I'm coming out, I do the overhand swing. You will not invade my small clothes!
You're no longer at disadvantage, by the way.
So it's the 22.
And that is only a 5.
Yeah, that's enough. It only had 2 hit points left. So you slam your sword into it, and it just explodes downwards into a splatter of mud all over Odie and Emma, but it's not moving anymore. You're all covered in mud, standing here with bones in mud piles.
Ugh.
What, by all the gods, was that?
I would like to look out over the lake. This is another one of those things. I don't know that I can do this yet, but I would actually like to use my divine sense to see if I can detect any celestial fiend or undead within 60 feet of me.
No, there isn't one.
Okay.
You do sense power, though, from the lake. The same kind of feeling that you had from that dream that you had last night. Like that ominous presence. That's what you get.
Something wrong with the lake. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong with it.
Odie kind of crouches down, and she leans over, and she's using the tip of the wooden sword, which she has let the shillelagh fade now. And she reaches down, and she's poking in it to look at the stuff that isn't mud or dirt or silt.
To the bones?
Yeah.
And you used Arcana, right?
Yeah.
You're thinking through all the things that you've been reading lately, and not just lately, too. You remember reading about something concerning creatures made of earth, but it's like at the tip of your mind. But you're pretty sure there's a book back at the cottage at Noelle's place, at your place, that might have more information about it. You just have to go do a little bit of research, that's all.
I remember seeing something in one of Noelle's books that might say what this was, but I don't like this.
I am not particularly comfortable with it either. And I am checking to see if this will happen again. I will take Odie's hand where it's been cut by the fishing line and use my last point of lay on hands to heal it.
Yeah, Odie, I don't even know if you realize, like, you're bleeding pretty badly from your arm.
Oh, how'd that happen?
And then Aramon takes your arm in his hand, and then there's that sparkling from him again, and the wounds close.
How many hit points?
Just one.
That takes me from 3 hit points to 4. Odie is pretty bruised up. When Aramon reaches down and heals Odie, she'll look up, meet his eyes. Thank you. And like kind of this look of impressed, like, oh.
Because I've been talking to her about my dreams and feeling like I have this calling now, as soon as like she looks up, the only thing I do is I just raise my eyebrows. Kind of like acknowledging, hey, look what I can do. And also, I didn't know I could do that.
With that, Dante is running back with a couple of people from Hovel's Way. There's Remy. And there's McGinty, who is a very large man. He's got a hammer. And Gracie with a crossbow. When they get there, Remy's like, what happened here?
These mud monsters came out of the lake and they attacked.
Mud monsters.
But we beat them back.
Well, that's good. Emma's like, oh my god, it was amazing. Aramon's got like magical powers and he can heal people.
I wasn't sure I was ready to explain that to anyone else yet. He does kind of sit there for a second going, I don't know if I was ready for that yet.
They all look at you. Magical powers? Like, what kind of magical powers? Remy pulls off his glasses and he cleans them for a second. He puts them back on. You three are filthy.
Uh-huh.
We should get you cleaned up.
Yeah.
The lake's right there, but maybe not the lake if monsters came out of it.
It just seemed to be the three that came out. I don't see anything else on the lake. I'm also going to cast Goodberry.
Get some hit points back?
Yeah.
I will also tell you, you get the benefit of a short rest.
Oh, hate you. I will eat both berries quietly by myself and not share them.
Like I said, you get the benefit of a short rest. You can spend your hit die if you want to heal yourself. If there's no other conversation to be had aside from mud monsters and whatnot, Remy's like, well, we should probably get back to town. You going to be okay here, Gordy? He's like, I'm going to come back to town too after I tie up the boat. That seems like a good idea. So Gordy ties up the boat. And he walks back into town with everybody else. I'm like, I don't think I want to be by the lake. Well, all this is going down.
If I hear him saying that, I'm like, I don't think there's anything active. There's just something lingering. And I don't know why I'm saying this to him. I just have that feeling that I expressed there.
Gordy looks at you. He's like, well, I appreciate your feelings, young man, but I think I'm just going to head back into town where it's a little bit safer and there's people and I'm not by myself. So we head back into Hovel's Way. It has been about 30, 40 minutes. Like I said, you can have the benefits of a short rest in this time if you want. Odie, you're doing that thing where you're clocking kids. No one sees Mateo. You don't see Mateo, and even Ma and Pa Beat are looking around for Mateo.
I saw him heading towards Valentine's.
I saw
Mateo, he was with me for a moment, but then after we talked for a second, he headed off to the hills. I've seen him use that distraction method before to wander off. He was there a moment, then he was gone. I was talking about one of my pine trees.
Yeah, I could see him wandering off for that.
Ma Beat is like, okay, kids, we should all go out and find him. Let's go. Everybody go in teams of three. Yes?
We could go out and find him.
Okay. You and Ahriman should go too.
I'm kind of worried with these things coming up. I don't want anyone else to be in danger, and Odie and I have dealt with these already, so maybe we should be the only ones putting ourselves in danger. I promise you I'll do everything I can to find your child.
Maybe the older kids.
You're right. The old people. Remy's like, I'll go too, and Ahriman grunts. He's like, And Celine, who's a smaller woman, is like, Ahriman said he's going to go too. That's Ahriman McGinty, the big guy. Grace and Valentine also both volunteer to go, as well as Grace's husband, Marcus. So there's a bunch of teams that are willing to go out and look for Mateo. What is your plan to find Mateo?
I would suggest that we head out towards Valentine's and the particular pine tree he was talking about and see if we can pick up Mateo's trail from there.
Sounds like a plan. So you head over to Valentine's. Valentine's place is a bit odd. Most of the trees in this area are fir trees, but Valentine has a bunch of oak trees growing around here. You can see some white oaks, red oaks, a post oak, all kinds of different oaks. And then mixed in on top of that is a bunch of pine trees.
So it's a strange, not disconcerting, but definitely eclectic little forest that he's got going here.
Yeah.
It's probably why you like it so much, Odie, to hang out in this place.
And I mean, honestly, Valentine sounds like a lot of the books that Odie reads. Like, if the books could talk, they'd sound like Valentine.
That's very accurate. You get to Valentine's place and you find the pine tree that he points out. This is where I last saw him. What do you do?
If we're near where we last saw him, I'm going to try and do my divine sense again, just to see if I am catching a lingering feeling of something potentially supernatural and dangerous in this area.
Nothing supernatural or dangerous. The ground itself, and you know, Odie, you start feeling this too, being a druid. The water in the lake, it felt malevolent in some way, shape, or form. Just like a small hint of like the hair on the back of your neck standing up. And that's what you got to Ahriman. When you're here on this ground, it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like it's tingling. Like you have this tingling sensation just being here in this grove.
Odie is not, she's not trained as a tracker, but she's got some natural talent for it. With Monty kind of helping, she would try and figure out which way Mateo went.
Yeah, make a survival check.
Okay, can I do that at an advantage?
Mm-hmm. By the way, here are the stakes, because I like laying out the stakes. You're going to be able to find Mateo. It's just how fast you find Mateo and what the situation is.
So I got a 15.
Nice. Between you and Monty, you pick up his trail. Monty basically sniffs him out. I think he went this way. When he starts wandering off, helping lead you along, it is up towards the hills where you live, but not quite that way. It's more towards the forest area that is right to the southeast of your hut. He's like, oh, I got the trail real good now. And all you hear, Ahriman, is like raccoon sounds.
At some point, we're running along, and Monty is running, but he's a raccoon. And he's a very well-fed raccoon. So he's got a little bit of a waddle to his run. So at some point, Odie would just scoop him up and hold him as they ran following the trail.
He's like, I think it's up here. And then you hear, stay away from me.
I hope he didn't mean us. We're too far away.
And you come upon Mateo, who you see up in a tree. And you see it's not a mud monster. It looks like it's made of stone and rock. And it's a little bit bigger and faster. And it's trying to start crawling up the tree.
Hey, leave him alone.
It stops and looks at you. So this monster made out of rock, you can see that there's like bone and flesh inside of the rock or attached to it in some way, shape, or form. But it's just this rocky creature thing that moves, and as it moves, you can hear it grinding. Odie, you're first.
Odie, along the way, has picked up a stick
that
is going to be much more like a staff.
Mm-hmm.
As she runs up to it, she shouts the incantation for Shalele and smacks it. I still miss, though, I'm sure.
This time, the monster just reaches up and blocks your stick. Like, the magic just reverberates off of it. Ahriman.
I think, as I'm looking at this thing, and it's primarily made out of rock, even though I don't know if it matters rules-wise, I'm going to pull out the hand axe because it makes more sense to chip away at rock with a hand axe than a longsword. I'm going to run up to it and attempt to basically chop into it.
Does a 16 hit?
Oh, 16 does hit.
That would be 8 slashing.
Yeah, you give it a good chunk. It is not dead, but it is very much hurt. So, Odie, when you walk up and you swing at it, it raises its arm, its rocky arm, and blocks it, and then Aramon comes over and, like, cuts its arm off at that, or chunks it pretty good, so it's, like, hanging on barely. You can see, like, the bone and the bits of flesh that are holding it together. The monster then ducks down a little bit, and then spins, swinging its arms around it like a rock pinwheel.
Oh.
It attacks both of you. It misses Aramon, but it smacks Odie for 3 points of damage as it spins around, blasting its arms here and there, bouncing off the metal of Aramon's armor and then hitting Odie, bashing her back a little bit. Odie, what do you do? Oh, you're going to get advantage because Mateo grabs like some like acorns, like big acorns off the tree and just like chucking them at the monster to distract it. You, take this! Stay away from Miss Odie!
Also, I picture Monty basically leaping from the back of Odie's backpack and her shoulders onto the tree to run up and be there with Mateo also chucking acorns down at it.
That's exactly what's happening, both of them.
Does a 13 hit?
A 13 does not hit, unfortunately.
Ugh, so close.
Now, once again, your weapon, he blocks it with one of his rocky arms as he's spinning around. Aramon.
I am going to look for, you know, something that already looks kind of cracked and use the axe technique again to swing for the crack and try and widen it.
No, you crit him.
Oh!
Well, it's destroyed. Why don't you tell me what happens?
I look for that crack and I, like, balance my hand on part of it for a second and I pull back the hand axe and I just chuck it deep into that that part that's already cracked, and then I just work the hand axe back and forth. And then I kick it apart when it starts to split.
It does. You kick it apart, it splits. You and Odie just beat on it until it stops moving.
Odie is just sitting there wailing on it with her staff long after it's stopped moving.
Odie, your glasses are like hanging off the end of your nose. You're like sweating. It's a lot of effort to beat these things into rubble, essentially. Mateo looks down at you both. Is it safe to come down yet?
Yes, and stop running off like this.
But I like... Oh, okay, Miss Odie.
I mean, I know, I totally get it. You want to go exploring. I would do the same thing too, but I don't know, just for a little bit, stick closer to home, because things are being weird out here.
Okay, Miss Odie, I'll try and do that. As you're making your way back, Jonathan and Noel show up because they heard about what was going on. They started looking around the forest too. You two okay?
Yeah.
I look at Jonathan and I hold up the hand axe and I said, I know you said this was for practicing two-handed fighting and using this to parry, but it definitely has other uses.
Well, yes, it can kill people too. It's good for chopping things.
I actually get like visibly deflated because I was expecting him to say anything that was like, good job, son. And instead he just like says that and like my shoulders just slump as soon as he says that.
In his mind, he's like, you said the most obvious thing possible. He's thinking to himself, if we were going to go into his internal monologue, like, I hope he realized that before he did it, instead of just realizing it in the moment. The kind of dad that you have, apparently. Not terrible, but not great.
Yeah.
Noel, I think the book, the big book with the black leather cover with the really intricate stitching on the cover that looks kind of like a little bit of a snake swirling around the edges of the book. I think that one mentions something like what these things are.
Oh, you're speaking of the Kula Kron grimoire, aren't you?
Yes.
Once you describe what you've been fighting, she's like, that seems problematic. I think I know what they are, but we should go and consult the grimoire first. We cut to your hut up on the hill. Noelle is making stew, because that's what she makes all the time, different kinds of stew. It's healthy for you. Jonathan is sitting there with the two of you. You have the Kula Kron grimoire out. You're both looking through it as she's making stew and going back and forth. Did you find anything in there, Odie?
I don't know, did I?
You did. These things are called slurgs. They are minions and monsters of
Valhall Morris the Mountain Strangler, which is a weird thing to hear because you've read about it, Odie. These are like mythical beings. They're called Titan Destroyers. Valhall Morris the Mountain Strangler is one of them. You don't really know much about it. Even the book doesn't go into it that much. Just that they're its servants. The Mountain Strangler is one of the creatures that can gift magical powers to people. The Titan Shards, which some mages use to learn spells. Not your order. Druids are different. But mages and sorcerers and warlocks, people like that, use these Titan Destroyers and their shards and the magic that's remnants of them to get their powers. Those who are very embedded into these Titan Destroyers can at times summon these creatures.
Odie will repeat all of that to everyone and then just kind of look up. She'll look at Jonathan and she'll look at Noelle and then she'll look back to Aramont. Does that mean the Mountain Destroyer is back?
Oh, no. If the Mountain Destroyer was back, we'd all be in a great deal of trouble. We'd see it. It's huge, supposedly. But these are myths. These are children's stories. Apparently not, though, says Noelle.
I take a moment, and I don't want to bring up the dream because my father is here. But after a second, I get as close as I can to Noelle and start explaining the dream that I had to her. And I know my father's going to hear it, but I still, there's like this embarrassment if he does hear it as I'm explaining this to her. And I'm afraid that this this dream means that maybe something is coming. Maybe something has arrived. I don't know. I'm hoping. You've always been very wise in magical, supernatural matters. I was hoping maybe you could understand what I was seeing.
Well, I'm not very familiar with the Dreaming Veil. That is not where me and Odie have put our focus, if I may be so bold. We do not truck with these gods. They're fickle. I don't know how Odie feels about that. That's what Noelle says.
I mean, this is what Odie grew up with, so...
I mean, they're more concepts than actual solid things to believe in. A compass rose, a dreaming veil, a long night. What is that all about? Noelle's a practical kind of woman.
There's got to be something to it because Aramon's dream told him the beat kids that were going to be at the shore were going to be in danger. And he did the thing with his hands.
And I involuntarily look over at my father, but I don't volunteer anything else about what happened there because he's here.
Your dad is just looking at you. His eyes are a little bit narrowed. He's just been watching you quietly, listening to this whole conversation. You can't get a read on him. Usually you can, but not right now. You've never really seen him like this before. He's very pensive.
I've had dreams and I have been fairly certain they meant things. And this one was even more concrete than some of the other dreams that I had, and I feel like this is warning us of something that we need to attend to.
Heard some disturbing things from around the barony. Your father goes off to the different towns sometimes to talk to people, get supplies, things like that. I was speaking with Graves Lakeshire. He's one of the fishing boat captains that works the Silt Salt Lake. He said that he saw a creature made of stone and bone drag a sheep into the lake while he was trekking from crossing to Nooks.
That sounds like these things.
I agree. Noelle looks around at the three of you. This all seems very bad. This may be the things that I was seeing in the stars. But you, young man, she nods to you, Aramon, you should be careful to trust entities that you are not completely 100% aware of. Yes, they might be giving you portents and messages, but what is their meaning? Why are they sending you that way?
And I think deep down, Aramon is just starting to get the beginnings of kind of a defensiveness because of his belief in the Dreaming Veil. It occurs to him in his mind that, you know, the Dreaming Veil, it is what it is. It is dreams, so it has to express itself through dreams. There is like kind of a deep understanding of that, but a complete inability to put this in any theological terms that make sense to somebody else other than his just gut feeling about this.
So I just warn you then, young man, I hear what you're saying and what you're thinking, but be careful. That's all. I will look more into this. Odie, you can help me.
Okay.
The two of you start doing research. You and your father, Aramon. At least your father's going to leave. I don't know what you're going to do. You can do what you want.
I want any reason to not go with him. But no one has given me another direction to go that would give me an excuse to not go with him.
To get a very quiet and awkward walk home.
As you get up to leave, Monty, who is on the table eating a flower crown, waves goodbye to you.
I pick up the stick from my belt pouch and I hold it up in front of my face like I'm saluting him, and I put it back in the pouch.
He looks around, he grabs like a spoon and he salutes you with it. As you two are walking home, your father, after about 15 minutes of silence, turns to you. So all that stuff you were talking about, you actually have a connection to the Dreaming Vale?
I do, Father. There's no other explanation for what has happened.
You know that I used to serve the King of Rook.
Yeah, I remember those stories. I listen intently to every time you tell these stories.
The King of Rook held the Blade of the Destroyer. It was a sword embedded with a powerful Titan shard. I've never seen creatures like the ones that you're talking about. I thought they were myths and fairy tales too, but I've always believed that the Titan Destroyers existed. What kind of magic could persist like that without being from something of that nature? He gets like this faraway look in his eyes, like he's thinking of the past. I've seen what that blade can do. I saw it level a castle wall.
And just for a moment, things are starting to thaw a little bit. I'm going to walk over to my father and actually like grab him by his shoulders and say, Father, I know I am meant to do something to make this world a better place. And I think we have had proof of this between my dream and the manifestations that have come. And I don't want to be a child in your eyes anymore, but you know more of the world. I need to know where I can go to get answers, because clearly there are things afoot that we need to learn about.
At that, you were walking into the Hovel's Way proper, and there's a bit of a to-do. All the people are out there in the little town square because there is a carriage there, a carriage with the Baroness's logo on it, little Hava Castakin. And standing is there is a couple of her guards and the Baroness herself. Your father turns to you and says, maybe you'll have your answers right here. We cut over to Noelle's home. The two of you, Odie and Noelle, you were looking through books. You've pulled out other volumes. And eventually, Noelle slams her staff on the floor. She's like, this just won't do. I just don't have the library here.
How can you not have the library here? You've got all the books.
I have many books, but this is a very small collection, comparatively speaking.
This is small?
Oh, yes.
You mean there are places with more books?
Absolutely.
More books?
I keep telling you that you don't have a very wide view of the world. You need to go out there. In fact, I'm going to need you to go out there because I'm going to need you to go and seek out some of my sisters.
Wait, are you talking about others from the Circle of Stars?
Yes. You're old enough.
I thought you didn't talk to them anymore.
I don't, but these are trying times, if the portents are correct. My order is a bit fractured at the moment, but I believe there are a few of my sisters that I can trust. One of them works for the Baroness, or at least works with the Baroness. In Castakin, I may need you to go there.
That's really far away.
It is. Maybe your friend Aramon will go with you.
Okay, that could be fun. I mean, but this is serious. This doesn't need to be fun. This needs to be serious, because there's bad things happening, and we need to find out what's going on and fix it.
She smiles at you as you say that. She comes and sits next to you, and she pats you on the shoulder. Odie, adventure can be fun. It can be serious, too, but it can also be fun. If you don't enjoy the little things along the way, what's the point?
From across the room, just laying on the table, Monty holds up one little raccoon paw with a berry in it up to the ceiling like, yes.
For adventure! That's what he says. And then he falls back over and starts snoring. We open on the Inn of the Wandering Soul. Within the inn sits your father, Jonathan, across from the Baroness of Castakin, Lilhava Castakin. She is a handsome woman, tall, strong, flanked by two of her soldiers. Robin has come down because part of her guard too. She's a little surprised to see Lilhava here, but Lilhava, rumors are that she had been traveling the barony for some reason, which is weird because tax season isn't for like 6 months. And she was just recently in Cyrene, so she's just continuing to travel. She hasn't been home in a while. And she's out here in Hovel's Way for some reason. To see your father, actually. Jonathan Duran,
I've come to ask you to come and assist me. There are things happening in the barony. The Brookshires have been acting, moving against, I believe, our barony, trying to jockey for position in the Kingdom of Rook. They went to war, or at least caused some problems with Cyrene for mining rights. We were there, doing what we could, and we are still there doing what we can to fight them off, make sure that Cyrene still has rights to those mines. But we need assistance as other things are happening. If you haven't heard, and Jonathan puts his hand up, he's like, I'm sorry, Baroness, but we've heard, we've had things happening here. These mud creatures came out and attacked some of the people of Hovel's Way. She looks to her left and her right, and then she looks over at Robin, and Robin nods at her. That seems quite disturbing. Would you please come back into service under me? I don't think I can. I'm an old man. This is my retirement. I'm quite happy here, and somebody needs to take care of the people and look after the people of Hobble's Way. But then he looks over at you, Aramon.
Cheeks totally flush red as soon as that happened.
And he doesn't say anything, he's just looking at you.
I would be more than willing to provide my services. I am not a sworn knight, but I am skilled, as skilled as my father could make me, and I would be honored to come with you and to look into some of these goings on.
She looks at you, she looks at Jonathan. This is your son. Jonathan nods. Tell me about yourself. Aramon?
Yes, Aramon Durant.
Oh, Robin Hunt has spoken highly of you.
Again, flushes bright red. I do kind of at this instance, though. He gets his composure under him, and I begin to explain. I originally was planning on becoming a knight. My father has trained me well, and I believe that I've learned his lessons.
That's when
well.
The door bursts open and Odie comes in.
Aramon, we need to go to a really big library. Who are these people?
Everybody just looks at you. There's like 20 people in here, and they all just stop and look at you. Robin smiles. The two guards pull their swords partially out of their scabbards.
She's got a very grumpy and sleepy Monty on her shoulder.
Monty whispers into your ear, I think you busted in on a meeting.
And as soon as there's, a breath that passes, and this is my friend who I also believe would be of use in this endeavor.
Hi.
Hello. I am Lil Hava Castakin, the Baroness of Castakin.
That sounds really important.
She smiles. Some days. Most days I am just trying to keep everything running. Who are you? Odie? I heard.
Odie, my full name is Odine Dahlia Celestine, but everyone just calls me Odie, except Noelle. She insists on calling me Odine, and it would be weird if she called me Odie.
When you say Noelle, she cricks her head to the right a little bit. Noelle Gaudet? Druid of the Stars?
Yes.
She lives here.
Back that way.
Interesting. I would be very keen to speak with her. Her sister, Siobhan Taliesin, speaks very well of her, that she is knowledgeable and wise. You've never heard the name before.
You mentioned she has sisters.
May we speak with this Noelle?
Yeah?
That is good. And you, Aramon, I would be much grateful for your service. I have most of my forces away at places. I was hoping that Jonathan here would be able to provide me with assistance in being able to move around the barony working for me. But if you and your friend Odie are interested, I would be very happy to take you both into my service.
Despite all of the awkwardness that he has been portraying, in this moment, all of a sudden, he is extremely composed, and he does this half bow to her that is just, like, absolutely perfect. This is what he has been waiting for. His purpose is starting to crystallize in front of him here.
Young lady, if you wouldn't mind leading the way.
Now? Okay. Yes, now. You'll have to get a cookie later.
Oh, but I want one right now.
This sounds important.
Okay, fine. Maybe the nice lady will give me a cookie. Can you ask her?
No.
The two guards and the Baroness look at you. Remy leans in. It's okay. She can talk to the raccoon. We all just kind of accept it. Siobhan has some odd tendencies, too. Many druids do, apparently.
He's a very nice raccoon, though.
You walk up to your hut, and there is Noelle looking through the telescope outside. There's a bit of a fire out there.
Noelle, I'm bringing people with me. This really important lady said she needed to talk to you.
Ah, little Hava Castakin is here, is she?
Yes.
The star said the Baroness was coming.
I don't think her guards like me very much.
She looks over at you and the guards who are glowering at you. And they'll have a Castigan standing there along with you, Ahriman and Jonathan. The Baroness and Noel go inside and speak. Just them and one of the guards is in there. The rest of you are standing outside. Remy's here too. Remy and Jonathan are talking. Things you might not have known about Remy, because he doesn't talk about it all the time. Ahriman, it sounds like he used to be a knight too.
I thought it was interesting that he had almost as many stories as my father, except he seemed to enjoy telling them a little bit more than my father.
They're talking about their old adventuring days when they used to ride off for the Kingdom of Rook.
I think it's like dawning on Ahriman that the protagonist of some of Remy's stories was probably Remy.
And some of them were probably your father. The two guards are looking at you, Odie. What's with the raccoon?
What do you mean, what's with the raccoon? He's my friend.
Okay. Does he got a name?
Yes, Monty. Well, it's Montague de Havilland Jones.
They both look at the raccoon. You want some food?
He perks up at that.
One of them pulls out a bit of cheese. You like cheese?
He likes pretty much everything. Although, I try not to let him have liquor, because then he just farts all night.
Then they both look at each other. The raccoon drinks? They both pull out some flasks.
No, I don't want him to have it, because he... And he's probably, like, holding out his hands.
Please, just give it to me. Give it to me. Do you say anything, Ahriman, to your dad? Or?
I actually think, while they're talking, I have it in my head that I need to get some things put in their proper place before anything goes further. And I'm going to look to see if I can find Robin.
Yeah, like, because you're up on the hill, right? As you start walking back towards Hobbleway proper, you see Robin walking up towards Noelle's home. It's nighttime, but, you know, the stars are out, and there's only a sliver of moonlight. But you see her walking up the path towards Noelle's home.
And I'm going to walk up to her.
Oh, Ahriman.
I haven't spoken to you, and that is wrong. If it is all right with you, we need to talk, but not now. Do you remember that time when the people from, you know, that were traveling through town were calling me stupid, and you told them that I wasn't stupid, I was just like a coin purse that was filled with so many copper pieces that it was really hard for me to find the silver piece?
Yeah, I remember that.
What I need to say to you, there is a coin in this coin purse, and I point at my head, that is for you, but I have so many other coins in my head right now.
It's a sloppy analogy, but I get it.
We need to talk, but...
Just tell me one thing.
Yes.
How do you feel about me? Because I care a great deal about you, and it's why I keep coming back here.
He is going to say the worst possible thing in this moment, and that is, you are one of my dearest friends, and I would do anything for you.
Is that all we are? Friends?
We are friends. He cannot put into words this at this moment, and he somehow thinks that saying that we are friends is going to actually keep this boat righted for a while.
When you figure out what that coin is, you let me know. But don't expect me to necessarily be receptive to whatever you have to say at that point in time. You've had plenty of chances.
If we have the chance, I would like to tell you about the other coins that I'm fishing out.
Well, I'm going to see the Baroness. You obviously have somewhere you have to be, unless you want to stroll back up there with me.
I can't think of anything else I would rather do right now.
So you walk and you talk. Like friends, like actual friends. The first time probably in a while.
I feel a huge weight lift off my shoulders, even though I still have a bit of a knot in my chest. It shouldn't be this complicated, but it's like there's this puzzle and I cannot figure out the right way to unlatch it. But for right now, there is so much weight off my shoulders being able to talk to her as a friend again.
Eventually, the Baroness comes out of the hut with Noel. She looks at two guards, and she sees that you and Robin are there. Seems that we have a plan. You, pointing at Odie, and you, Ahriman, are going to come with me, and we are going to get to the bottom of whatever is going on with these slurks. Something to do with Valhalmor's The Mountain Strangler, which is, I thought, a fairy tale, and apparently might be real. I know that people can draw on the power of the Titan Destroyers, and that things have been going askew in my barony. I will not have that. You two, and you, she points at Robin, are going to head up my task force, I shall say, to discover what is going on with these slurgs, and whoever is using them, because I believe somebody is using them to try to harm the barony. Fishing boats have been going missing on the Silt Salt Lake. Odd folks have been going into crossing. Some say that the son of Brookshire has been traveling around the barony with his retinue causing trouble. I do not know the truth of this, but that is going to be what you are going to do. But first, we are going to head back to Castakin, so that you, pointing at you, Odie, can look into my library.
A library? With more books than Noelle has?
Yes. Noelle walks up to you as the meeting breaks up a bit. You'll get to meet my sister, Siobhan. I believe she is still on our side.
But tread carefully?
There was a schism with the sisters, the Druids of the Star. We, don't all follow what I would consider the proper paths.
Okay.
The next morning comes around and the Baroness is getting ready to leave with all of you. Is there anybody you'd like to say goodbye to? Is the whole hamlet of Hovel's Way out to say goodbye to you?
I'll say goodbye to all of the beat children. I'll especially say goodbye to Roger and Cheryl and give them some last minute advice for dealing with the cough that one of their goats has. Then I'll also have a moment with Valentine to tell him that I'm going to go to the city and I'm going to go to the library and I'm going to read all sorts of books and they're all going to sound like you in my head.
Valentine looks down at you because he's a very tall man. Oh, I'm so happy for you. You get to go to a library. Libraries are such lovely places. They're called libraries, by the way. That's where they store the books. I think you knew that, though.
Yes, because I said library. I said I'm going to go to a library.
I was sorry. I was paying attention to the pine.
What's it saying?
It's not saying anything. It's just, it feels sleepy.
Well, keep an eye on things, because things are weird.
Very weird. The oak is cranky. Doesn't like the way the ground feels right now.
You should bring Mateo along when you talk to the trees, because I think he might be able to talk to the trees, too.
Interesting. I will keep that in mind. He does like to wander.
And he likes going to the trees. They protected him.
He does like to climb them, doesn't he? He is a young man. Young men like to climb trees.
Young people like to climb trees. I like to climb trees, too.
That's a good distinction. I think I've seen Wilma climbing trees and sure.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Such an awkward conversation between two awkward people. What about you, Aramon?
I am definitely going by and say goodbye to Remy.
Ah, my boy.
So, at some point, I think I'm going to need to hear those stories again with the proper names filled into them.
When you come back, I'll do that. He pulls his glasses off and cleans them and puts them back on. Oh, you know, before you head off, I have something for you. He walks back into the Inn of the Wandering Soul and comes back out with a belt pouch and a belt. This was mine. I think you should take it. I used to bring it with me everywhere I went on all of my travels. There's a little bit something in there for you. There is a journal in there of all of his handwritten notes of his, like, adventures.
And I like, flip through it a little bit, and I, like, hold it, you know, up to my chest and say, I appreciate this very greatly. Also, can you make sure that Father has breakfast? He doesn't always take care of himself the way he should.
Don't worry, I'll take care of your dad. We've been together a long time, traveling this world. We both miss your mom greatly. She's a wonderful woman.
I breathe out deeply, and I come in for the big hug with Remy.
And he gives you the big hug back.
I will take care of this. You want me to add to it?
Absolutely. That way, you won't forget your story so that you can tell them to me someday, or your children.
And I put the book back in the pouch. And before I leave, I want to make sure to track down Emma and Dante.
You find Dante. He is sitting there with his wooden sword looking at it.
I don't know if my father is going to be in the mood to provide some lessons, but I am going to give you permission now to bug him about going and asking him about it.
He looks up at you. So you're leaving?
I'm leaving for now. I have a purpose. I have something I need to do.
When you come back, I'll be ready. And I'll be stronger, and I'll be able to fight by your side.
For a second, I have that protective, you know, thing where I want to tell him not to, you know, grow up too fast or be, you know, put himself in any danger. But I kind of realize that this is the kind of thing my father is very bad at. I kind of touch him on the shoulder, and I say, I know you will.
You find Emma. She is practicing her sword forms, except she's practicing with a real sword.
Your grip is a little too high. But your footwork is excellent.
Well, I had a good teacher.
I was talking
about your dad, not you. You're a pain in the ass.
My father was a pain in the ass before me, so I get it honestly.
Then she picks up a knapsack, and you realize that she's packed to travel.
Where are you heading?
With you. Robin took me on as her apprentice, her squire.
Oh. I get super self-conscious of all of the lessons that I gave her because I'm afraid if I taught her something wrong, Robin is going to be able to point it out.
Remember, I'm like 3 days older than you. She like punches you in the shoulder as she walks past you.
I guess she's walking away. I go, I know. When did that happen?
19 years ago. We cut to the carriage and a set of horses. The carriage driver is up on the carriage with the other guard. You are all on horses with Robin and Emma and the two of you. And you start riding off to Castakin. And as you ride off into the sunset out of Havel's way, how do you feel, Odie?
Excited. I think Odie is thinking of the future and the library and the places and things they're going to see. And it's only as they like start cresting the hill that once they pass over this hill, they'll no longer be able to see any of Havel's way, that she remembers to turn around and take one last look at home. Because it's always going to be home.
And how do you feel, Aramon?
I actually feel like there's still a lot of things to resolve in my head, but I feel like for the first time in a while, I'm moving in the right direction. As that feeling hits me, I've spent, you know, some time with Remy and at the inn, and I am actually trained in performance, and I think I picked that up from Remy. And there is a song that I often sing that is about a swordswoman measuring her sword against various other duelists. And I do not understand any of the bodiness of this song at all. And I start belting this song out. And I have done this many times and have never understood the actual meaning of this song. And I start singing it now as we take off.
As you start singing that, the two guards look at you side-eyed. Robin starts laughing as Emma blushes. I don't know that Odie would... I don't know, you tell me. Would Odie understand what's going on here?
Not in the slightest, but she'd happily sing along.
Yep, and then Odie starts singing along. Then Robin laughs and she starts singing along.
And then the two guards start singing along, as does the carriage driver, and even the Baroness starts singing along with the song as you ride off to Castakin.
This was episode one of The Heroes of Havel's Way. Angela Murray played Odie. Jared Rasher played Aramon. Chris Nizak played everyone else. The music and sound effects were from Storyblocks and Envato. The end song lyrics were written and performed by Chris Nizak, and the music was From the Earth by Humans Win. We look forward to bringing you more of this actual play series. And if you'd like to interact with us, you can check out our Discord server. There will be a link in our show notes. You can also help by becoming a patron. Each episode, I'll be giving a DM commentary on the choices I made about the game itself. Plus, I'll probably talk a bit about the editing and sound design if you're interested in that. Also, there are these bi-weekly PDF content releases that we have. The first one is actually about the town and NPCs of Havel's Way. That's the place you just spent some time listening to us play in. There might even be some original spells, which is our second PDF release when you hear this. You can get that at patreon.com/thac0wa. That's patreon.com/thacowa. You can check it out with a free 7-day membership, and if you want to stick around, it's only $5 a month. Helps us make this show and Thaco with Advantage, the fantasy-focused RPG advice show Ange and Jared host. Speaking of patrons, we'd like to thank Victor and Doug for being our first two patrons and friends of Thaco with Advantage. Finally, we're part of the Polygamerist Podcast Network, where we want to help you play your best games. If you enjoy The Heroes of Havel's Way, you might want to check out our MM Play season of Children of the Shroud. That's our high school urban fantasy AP that we played. The whole series is out now and is edited very much like this one. With that, I want to say thanks once again for listening, and don't let those slurg invade your small clothes.